SBS Radio.
Welcome to another episode of Tell Me Law.
Bertrand, thank you very much for having me here today. I would like to first give our acknowledgement to the traditional owners of the land that we're in today, the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, and their elders, past, present, and future.
Tell Me Law, our regular episode demystifying legal challenges faced by the community. Now, today, Matthew, you've got a topic that's out there. People are faced with it, but they face a lot of issues. First of all, understanding what it is. It's defamation. What is defamation?
Excellent question. And to give some context to today's discussion, I've had a couple of matters recently where I've represented Aboriginal corporations and prescribed body corporate facing defamation issues, and I've given advice in that space and represented clients in that space. And so this is a topic that I think Indigenous people are experiencing, and so hopefully there can be a lot of value from today's episode of Tell Me Law. So defamation is a very old legal principle that really was enshrined in the old English case law, and it was essentially going to protect somebody from taking down and bringing down the reputation of another person. Defamation has become extremely relevant these days, where you've got online publications, where you've got a lot of podcasts these days, there's a lot of emails. Information these days travels extremely fast, and so in that space you can imagine how quickly somebody's reputation can be brought down. So defamation has an extremely important part to play in today's environment.
And, you just mentioned it, social media. I can think about our reputation can be demolished in a fraction of a second.
Most definitely.
Yeah, but if there's defamation, when should one decide to bring this to court?
That's a excellent question. Now, if I could just go back one step and just explain that there's legislation in each state and territory of Australia that is not entirely identical, but is very close to being identical. And that was to stop people from shopping around for the appropriate jurisdiction, so that they're more likely these days to bring defamation proceedings in the actual, state in which the defamation occurred, in which they reside, and in which there's that proper nexus. Defamation proceedings are really something that should be considered in being brought to the court's attention where there's a proper basis for that defamation proceeding to be brought. So in defamation, there's a few elements that need to be satisfied. And so if somebody has been defamed and each of these elements have been satisfied, then legal proceedings could be imminent. These elements are, number one, there must be a publication. Number two, the publication itself, whether it be online, whether it be through LinkedIn, social media, Twitter that you mentioned, Bertrand, that must be communicated to other people. The statement itself needs to defame the individual. You need to be defamed in terms of your own character. And the statement published has to be defamatory in the nature of the statement itself. So really the key points of identification, publication, and defamatory nature. Now, if those requirements have been met, we've had clients come to us and say, what do we do? In those circumstances, there's the process that's set out in the Defamation Act. It starts with issuing a concerns notice, which is a letter setting out what the defamation is that's taken place.
So you send the letter to the person who is responsible for it?
Correct.
Yeah.
That's right. And that's the concerns notice is a requirement under the Defamation Act in Victoria. And if there's not a proper acknowledgement, if there's not a proper resolution resulting from that concerns notice and a person's reputation has been defamed, then legal proceedings are most likely imminent.
If, let's say, you bring a claim within 1 year, how can the other person respond? Or let's say if the person doesn't even see, because let's say I'm not a heavy Twitter user, and someone has defamed me using Twitter, and I only find out days later when my friends or my colleagues start, you know, looking at me weird. How does you know? How do you react to that?
So how do you react if the matter's brought to
you
the?
Know, if I only find out, you know, let's say someone is doing stuff on Facebook and
yes.
denigrating me and defaming me and all that.
Yes.
And it takes a bit of time. Yes. I see my friends, you know, they don't talk to me anymore. My colleagues start acting suspiciously towards me, and I don't know where this comes from. And down the track, I find out that, there's a source
yes.
for this behavior towards me.
Yes.
So if I don't take action immediately, or if I can't identify exactly where, because you know when you see people acting badly, differently,
yes.
unless you start probing them and finding out, people are not forthcoming to tell you the information.
Yes.
And you just find out later on, it could take time before you realize the damage that has been done to you.
That's right. And that's one of the great difficulties in defamation proceedings. There's a time limitation of 12 months from the first publication, meaning if in that scenario your friends had treated you differently, hadn't been as warm and forthcoming to you as they previously had been, and it resulted from a publication, you then just find out, say, 13 months about that publication on Twitter or yeah. Facebook or, yeah. or even in an email, or yeah. it can even be verbal.
Yeah.
If you found out about that more than 12 months, then in the most extreme circumstances, would you be able to get an extension? But in defamation, I personally never seen an extension of time granted beyond that 12-month period. So defamation is one of those areas that you need to be fast in understanding the source of that publication and then acting to protect your own reputation. There's some line of thinking that says that after that 12-month period, the person's reputation's already been damaged. So bringing legal proceedings to an already damaged reputation doesn't have any great protection in any event. One thing to add on that is it's 12 months from that publication. So just say you've suffered from somebody saying something that is untrue against your reputation, then you find out later on that there's something else that's said that is a new defamatory comment about you. The imputation isn't the exact same comment, and it isn't the exact same in terms of the words of that publication that was first said about you. Then that 12-month period can go from that publication. So it's per publication.
Can you give us an example of a case where a case that was outstanding that you had to defend or follow?
Yep. So there was a case of Raynor and Murray. This is a case that I thought was very interesting. It's in the District Court in New South Wales. Patricia Murray was a tenant in Manly in New South Wales, and she lived in these particular flats known as the Watermark. She was ordered to pay $120,000 damage to the chairman of the building's strata committee for a defamatory email regarding an unlocked mailbox. In that scenario, there was the email that was sent to 16 residents of those flats. And you can imagine, you know, just say you sort of live in a block of flats, the body corporate isn't performing its obligations, that you're a bit sort of fed up with the chairman, and you send an email in the heat of the moment that, you know, defames the character of the chairman of the body corporate or the strata committee, as it was in this instance. Then facing legal consequences and having to pay such a significant amount as $120,000, plus with the legal fees that goes into that as well. What the reason why I found that so interesting is because this particular woman was a 78-year-old widow, and she needed walking sticks to enter the witness box. So you can imagine a lady like that probably isn't as aware of the great devastating effect that online communications and emails and the like can have.
Yeah. But how can a judge slap her with that kind of huge fine, $120,000? Can she even afford it?
Well, that's a good point. I'm not sure of her financial limitations, and there are limits that are set in the legislation about the amount of damages that can be paid.
Yeah.
Sometimes malice, as in this case, is taken into consideration, and the judge found that the communications were definitely defamatory. They were menacing and malicious. Ms. Raynor was protected, and the Patricia Murray, the tenant, the old lady, was penalised for malicious defamation sent via email, despite her age.
Wow, $120,000. And another thing in these kind of cases, some people are very sensitive, and they might actually, they're a politician, a public figure, someone of high standing in society would be more susceptible to protect their reputation. Some people might be really trigger happy.
That's right. Remember, though, the points of access to justice that we've discussed in our earlier episodes?
Yeah.
That same point definitely comes into play when we're looking into the defamation context, because people are often fast to point the finger and say that was defamatory. But unfortunately, even protecting your reputation because of defamation does cost a lot of money and is a long, drawn-out process. The other thing to bear in mind in terms of practicalities and defamation is if there's something that's been said against, say, one of our listeners, not only do they need to get legal advice straight away because of that 12-month limitation period, they also need to make sure that they're aware of the consequences in commencing proceedings, because the media could get a hold of the actual proceeding itself, and there could be then republication of the comments, and the defamatory publication itself could then come out in later publications through the media if they get a hold of the case, and that can all make matters worse. So that's one of the practical implications that really needs to be considered.
So if, let's say, someone has defamed me on Twitter, I didn't go to court. I don't even know. And then a media organization picks up that defamatory comment, publishes it. Who is responsible? The first Twitterer or the media organization?
Yes, that's an excellent point. And you can potentially have both the publisher of the initial publisher and also the host organization. So, for example, I was involved in a case recently where there was a online forum and our client was defamed. We then commenced proceedings against both the publisher of the defamatory comments and the entity which owned that online forum that the publication was posted.
I see it having serious implications as a moderator over social media platforms. So I can see the implications there. If someone makes comments, we don't respond to it, and then down the track, snowballs into something major.
Yes. Negative comments alone don't constitute defamation, because there's defenses that can apply. So there's a number of defenses for defamation, but some of the defenses do include truth-related defenses. Defenses where there's circumstances of privilege or protection in light of the comments that were made, if there was a level of innocence in that dissemination, if the publication itself was trivial. Another very common defence is the defence of justification. Justification is essentially where there's a high level of substantial truth, so that even if that statement is not 100% true, it's almost true, and there was no malicious intent inside of that statement, so that the defence of justification can apply, meaning that a person isn't then liable for defamation. So there's a sensible approach taken in terms of the defences.
Yeah.
But you're right, Bertrand. As a moderator, as an owner of an online forum, website, Google in particular, has great responsibility. And I remember there was a Spider-Man movie released quite a few years ago now, and I can remember at the beginning of the movie, there was a statement to the effect of, with great power comes great responsibility. And I think that needs to be kept in mind for those online websites, Google, and the like.
Yeah. And what does this mean for me as a person if I'm defamed?
What this means is, number one, being aware of what's being published and said about you, because you need to comply with the 12-month limitation period. Number two, it means getting legal advice promptly, trying to resolve the issue, for example, through the concerns notice that I mentioned.
Yeah.
And then understanding your rights if you do choose to go to court or if it's required.
And what does it mean for me as the person if I'm the one making the statement?
If you're the one making the statement, it means if what you're saying is completely true, then most likely a defence to defamation would apply, but you still need to apply some practical wisdom and just be sensible in who you're saying things about, where you're saying things about, but at the same time, you still do have that right to freedom of speech. So you need to make a sensible weighing up and conscious understanding of what is being communicated and when you're going to communicate that.
Yeah. Just to wrap it up, Matthew, remind us which platforms and mediums we're talking about, where we could be defamed or where we could be defaming others.
Yes.
Because people nowadays, you know, everyone has got access. Everyone is a broadcaster. Everyone has got a media, a platform on which they express themselves, and they could potentially break the law.
That's right. And there's actually a lot of debate about whether or not our defamation laws have kept up with the level of publications and broadcastings that take place these days. Particularly, even at the beginning of our episode now, I mentioned that defamation stemmed from the old English principle. Well, we've come a long way since, you know, the old medieval times. And we do need to be aware of publications in all platforms, whether they be online, on one of those social media outlets such as Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, on radio, on television, even in movies. Really, wherever there's a statement that's said, even in person, even like the case Raynora Murray, where it was by email, we need to be really aware that any publication, even verbal, can be taken as defamatory. So we need to be accountable and responsible in how we speak and what we say, whilst also understanding our rights to do so.
Want to hear more stories like this? Listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.